This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Natalie Porter. Natalie Porter is the Program Director for Revenue Cycle Improvement at the Northwestern Memorial Hospital and the great system here in Chicago, one of the elite systems in the country. Natalie, can you introduce yourself and also make sure I've got your title correct, because I seem to always not do it exactly right.
Yeah, hi. My name is Natalie. I am the Program Director of Net Revenue Improvement, so more or less functionally the same, but I work for Northwestern Memorial Healthcare, which is an 8-hospital system here in Illinois.
And the Program Director of Net Revenue Improvement, that seems like a newer role. I mean, maybe it's a variation of roles I've been out there before, but what does the Program Director of Net Revenue Improvement do? Is that a revenue cycle role? Is that a service line role? What does that do?
Sure. So I think for all intents and purposes, the best way to think about it is, you know, we look for opportunities across the system to improve bottom line impact, right? So I think that what's kind of exciting about that, right, is that it can take a lot of different shapes. The revenue cycle is obviously a big focus because, you know, it's the engine from which cash is sort of generated. And so most of our work lives in kind of the denials, write-off, underpayment, reimbursement space. You know, but we also look at opportunities across the organization to increase efficiency, you know, reduce days in AR, you know, any type of work that we could do to accelerate or gain efficiency as well.
And when you look at improving revenue and so forth, what are the things, if you were telling somebody, here's the top things that you could find that revenue improvements, where are those typical spots where the opportunities lie?
I think that most organizations are going to have similar pain points. I think far and away, the first is going to be money that is sort of leaking out on the back end because organizations either don't have the operational capacity or, you know, skills or technology to really wage a good fight with payers on medical necessity denials. I think that, you know, due to a lot of sort of shifting things in our industry, you know, over the last several years, you know, the focus on clinical policies, clinical documentation, protocols, those type of things are, you know, more and more sort of being integrated with, you know, the rev cycle's needs, right? So often a claim is kind of alive or dead, you know, by the time it gets to PFS, right? If, you know, something needed to occur clinically before this service was eligible, right? Like, those are things that, you know, can't be impacted once the services are provided. And so, you know, I think what's challenging, you know, us and all organizations in this space is, you know, how do we better partner with our clinical operational teams, you know, our payers and, you know, their clinical counterparts, you know, to really collaborate on, you know, ensuring that there's alignment in terms of what's medically necessary and what's not.
Thank you. And then, Natalie, when people talk about improving revenue, net revenue improvement, what doesn't work? What do people talk about that they make noise about but really doesn't work in your experience?
Yeah, so I think, you know, there's probably a lot of answers to that. I think when we look at it at a macro level, I think a lot of organizations look at EHR conversions as, you know, this way to get this massive ROI, right, with this big project. And surely there are examples where EHR conversions have had return, right? But I think it takes a long time to realize those returns. And it's very dependent on sort of your strategy and approach with implementation. So I think a lot of times people go into those projects having, you know, big dollar signs in mind for the coming years. And what they find is just, you know, there was some, just we didn't prioritize the right things, or, you know, certain things that, you know, we sort of thought were going to be fixed with this, you know, new system, you know, maybe we're still challenged with. And also just it's hard to really gain all of the efficiencies that you can from a new system out of the gate that takes additional investment. So it's not that there is no ROI, but I think often people estimate there's going to be a greater one than what they actually end up seeing.
When you also said something interesting, that whenever somebody engages in a new project, it's not just the purchase of that technology itself. It's lots of staff and often lots of other technologies that are needed to support that right and get the most out of it. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I think that, you know, whether it's Cerner or Epic or, you know, whoever, right, like there are, for all intents and purposes, you know, kind of these, they're out-of-the-box implementation models. And in a former life, I've worked with a lot of different organizations during these conversions. And to your point, I think the success and failure is largely dependent really on some of the cultural investments that are made prior and during the design of the system, you know, that are in support of its long-term success.
And then in terms of improving functions, improving processes, you know, there's a simple arithmetic way to place this, but how much of it is a people-driven thing and having the right talent-driven thing versus changing technologies and having the right technologies? You know, obviously you can't do any of this today without great analytics, great technologies. If not, you're sort of spending so many man hours and people hours to fix things or get things right. But what's the mix of great people versus great technology? And will the need for people increase or soften a little bit as technology gets better? What's some of your sense of that?
Yeah, so I kind of think it depends on the problem that you're seeking to solve, right? And, you know, if the problem in front of you is, you know, I think, you know, using kind of some of the work that we do as an example is, you know, often we're given kind of an ambiguous, you know, data set or ambiguous performance issue, right? And kind of have to make sense of what needs to happen or should happen to resolve that, right? That requires, I think, people, right? And I think you need the right experience and, you know, tools and, you know, that requires sort of a human element, right, to critically assess something. But I think, you know, when we zoom out and say, you know, what are the rev cycle challenges, right, as an industry, administrative waste and cost is obviously top of most organizations' mind. And there's many of those problems that can be easily solved with technology. But I think you need the right people to implement those. And so I hardly ever, I think, can approach a single problem and not kind of have the trifecta, right, of, you know, what's the policy that governs this, what's the technology that drives most of it, and then, you know, what's kind of the role and responsibility of people in this solution, where the, you know, distribution of that lies, whether it's technology, people, or policy, I think really depends on, again, the problem.
Fascinating in terms of this trifecta of how you view it, because I always view it as people, technology, and obviously you bring a much broader swoop to this of policy as well. What's the policy? What are we trying to accomplish here in addition to the people and technology needed for it? The next question I have for you is, on so many discussions today with technology people, where at some point they're talking about data analytics to such a granular level that it seems like there might be some spot where the cost benefit of how far you're going and how much effort is taken to get there might outweigh the benefit to the people that are actually trying to improve, in your case, revenue. What's that fine line on not letting the data scientists go so crazy that they're going in a direction that's more than needed and doesn't allow you to do your job? Is there any balance on that?
Yeah, I think this is something that I deal with constantly, right? Because it's not uncommon, I think, to find yourself in kind of paralysis analysis, right? When you're dealing with either a sensitive topic or something that's complicated that, you know, people don't feel comfortable with. I think everybody's knee jerk, right, is to say, well, let's try to understand it better. Let's get more data. And I think, you know, one of the things that I try to challenge, you know, the people that my team works with is, okay, what is this data, what's actionable from it? Why, like, how is it going to change the outcome? And so I think by trying to first define what it is that you're trying to change, right? Or what's the observable thing that you're trying to impact? So let's say, for example, you know, you find that for your ICU leveling that you have some facilities that, you know, have one's using this methodology and one's using this methodology. You know, I think you can go, okay, well, which one is seeing more denials? But I don't think that answers the question, how should they be charging, right? And so, it's, I think, really about pushing your operators to say, what's the information that's going to be key to this decision that we need? And really trying to refine what's the data that moves you in one direction or the other.
So really a clear focus on what's really needed for what your task at hand and some real thinking to go into that. Then you don't have sort of the data scientists going crazy all over the place, digging up all kinds of things of which only a few may be truly material, got you into this paralysis standpoint where they've dug so far that you don't even have the timely information that you want. Talk to me for a moment, Natalie, if you don't mind, about career path. What's a career path for somebody that moves into sort of program director of net revenue improvement? Just, and I know it's a unique sort of job, but I'm sure a growing job. What was the career path to get to where you are today?
Yeah, so I think probably something that's good to clarify is that, you know, there's nuance in our industry, right, with like titles and names and what we call things, and especially in some of these like new emerging kind of functions. And so I think for, you know, in a lot of ways, our team sort of functions, you know, in an industry definition of sort of like revenue integrity, right? As we're effectively going, you know, how do we ensure that we're efficiently turning services into cash? Which is more or less, I think, how a lot of people perceive the concept of creating, you know, a revenue integrity type of team within their organization. And so, you know, I think that a lot of different paths can lead a person sort of into this, you know, improvement or optimization or revenue integrity or whatever, you know, your organization sort of calls it. I think a lot of people come with mid-rev cycle experience like CDM charging or coding, or, you know, even I think there's a lot of people who transition from clinical type of work, right, and work in like a nurse auditor capacity and sort of take that path. I came from I have a consulting background, so I kind of did a mix of different things, and so I think that positioned me well because I sort of have a good view of the revenue cycle end-to-end, you know, which allows me to have a unique perspective versus somebody who has specialized experience. So I think it's really a new concept, you know, when we talk about the revenue cycle, this idea of having sort of an institutionalized team that's there for performance improvement, but it's really coming out of a need of our industry just complexer than it was, you know, a few years ago. And so, you know, we demand it now. There's somebody that needs to do this because, you know, our operating teams are really still trying to just keep their head above water day to day.
No, 100%. And fascinating. So sort of a mix of experiences to get to this point today. And what you said is that it's, you know, there are different variations. So many roles have been out there before. So it's not necessarily a new role, but it's a new focus, a new clarity on it. Mm-hmm. And a system as great as Northwestern can make that effort to do that, to put a specific person in charge of this effort. Let me ask you another question, and I'll ask you two more questions, and I promise I'll let you go. You see so many different companies trying to pitch you on, you need this technology, you need this piece, you need this analytics, you need this consulting. How do you judge that kind of stuff? And is there anything that you've brought in as a tool over the last couple of years? And I'm agnostic to whether it's a sponsor or not of ours, doesn't matter to me. I'm more just interested in information for our audience. Anything that you've brought in over the last couple of years, you know, how do you assess technology or anything that's being sold to you? And then is there anything specifically or a couple things that have really worked, you know, you're sort of pleasantly surprised how well they've worked out for your team?
Yeah, so I think this is a philosophical question somewhat, right? Because I think, you know, a person's dependency on these things or their desire to be right should fit into kind of a strategy of some kind. And from my perspective, my general approach with like AR management or rev cycle management is, I think you first need to have validated that whatever, you know, solution you're bringing in, that it's not something that Epic can do or can develop. And I think that people don't nearly leverage enough their Epic counterparts or their Cerner counterparts or whoever, right, to say, hey, we can't be the only organization that has this problem, right? Like, so what do other organizations do? I think often we learn that we're underutilizing tools that we already have. So I think that's one. I think two is I'm I way more value and prioritize engaging services that are audit-based or contingency-based, right? Where here's this function that we do internally, go, you know, sweep up behind us, let us know, you know, what we could do differently, you know, so that we're not repeating these mistakes over and over. And that's, I think, just a clear win-win, right? Is that, you know, there's nothing that is lost or gained by having somebody go through and give you that kind of insight and business intelligence on how you're working day to day. And so then the third would be like, if we're talking bolt-on technology, right? Things that you either you have your EHR and or your EMR rather and your billing system, and you know, here's this thing that we want to bring in that's going to supplement this technology, is, you know, I think that there are really not a ton of good cases for operating tools, right? Like I think EMR systems have robust working, I'll say workless drivers and things of that nature. So I tend to not have a great interest in exploring things like that. And then in terms of analytics and, you know, AI and trying to, you know, I think bring in, you know, that kind of next level technology, I really think that there's so much underutilization of existing technologies that it's like a walk versus run, right? Like, let's make sure for whatever this function is that, you know, we're first doing it well enough, right? Given what we can, what we have available today. And then if there's something that there's a clear ROI in to bring in, then, you know, that would make sense at that point. But often, I think that's not the case.
So a lot of effort, and this tremendous sense, to optimize what you already have, because every time you buy a new tool, operational tool, platform tool, any kind of tool, not only you got to see if it's actually going to be used by your group, it's actually going to be useful, you're actually going to get an ROI on it, but also how much effort is it going to take to support, integrate in, mm-hmm. implement, and so forth. And so there was a period of time where people were being sold hard everything and buying hard everything, and it turns out so many of those tools weren't well used. So sort of starting with a first, yes, you might want best in class a specific tool, but first we're going to see if Cerner or Epic does it. Then we're going to start working on, do we really need it? Is it really going to get used? What's the cost? What's the ROI, et cetera?
Yeah, and I think too that, you know, the question of does Cerner or Epic do this, I think that's really often kind of where the buck will stop, right? Is that you'll find, oh, wow, it does, right? And I didn't know it, or we already licensed something. We just need a workflow for this. And in my experience, I think that they've been very responsive to clients that say, well, we need it to do this, right? And using that as a platform to develop it, you know, internally.
And as you said, if you're working with a major vendor, whether it's an Allscripts, a Cerner, an Epic, whatever the big vendors are, because they're touching so many of the same systems with similar problems, they've likely either looked at the issue, fixed the issue, or tried to fix the issue, or decided they can't, one of them,
right, or
developed the workflow for it. So there's lots of those opportunities. Natalie, it's been a pleasure visiting with you today. Just tremendously insightful and a pleasure. I appreciate you spending time with us today. I won't ask you to put your name out there and contact everybody out there for everybody to follow up with you and find you, because they'll probably get overloaded with people. But if you want to learn more about Northwestern Memorial, Eggweed Health Systems in the country, please do look up Northwestern, you know, Northwestern Memorial, always a top-ranked system under U.S. News and so forth. And Natalie, you're now Program Director of Net Revenue Improvement, and I appreciate you so much spending time with us today and sharing with us so many helpful thoughts. Thank you very much.
The pleasure is mine. Thank you, guys.